Welcome to a very special edition of Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Today, we had the pleasure of speaking with John L. Marshall, MD, Chief in the Division of Hematology and Oncology at MedStar Georgetown University Hospital, Professor of Medicine and Oncology, and Director of the Otto J. Roush Center for the Cure of Gastrointestinal Cancer at Georgetown Lombardi Comprehensive Cancer Center, Georgetown University, to discuss physician burnout in oncology. According to Marshall, oncologists rank among the top medical providers to experience burnout. Burnout is characterized by repeated physical and emotional exhaustion, cynicism and depersonalization, and low sense of professional accomplishment, according to a study published in the American Society of Clinical Oncology educational book. Results from the study showed that increased exposure to the care of patients who are terminally ill with cancer, high occupational demands, increased administrative responsibilities, use of electronic medical record systems, and lack of social support are just some of the factors associated with burnout. While oncologists are at a higher risk of experiencing burnout, several steps can be taken to reduce it. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Marshall provided his perspective on burnout in oncology, discussed the long-term personal and professional consequences of burnout, and shared ways to reduce oncology burnout on an individual and organizational level.
Dr. Marshall, how does the oncology burnout rate compare to that of other specialties?
It's really interesting. We are now seeing a sort of shift over the last really 10 years of oncologists going from maybe one of the most exciting and vibrant fields to one that, despite our successes in clinical medicine, all the research that we're doing is paying off, our world is getting harder and harder. And so we are seeing a fairly rapid rise in oncology burnout today, to where some suggest that it is among the highest, if not the highest, among all medical specialties in burnout. And if you start to compare, you know, differences, you might think that like surgeons have a very stressful world, but it turns out that surgeons have a pretty low burnout rate. And when you compare the two, one sort of wonders about why that would be. You know, some people say that it's because, well, surgeons have a world where they do their thing, the operating room, and the outside world doesn't bug them. Nobody's asking them for a pre-auth or a signature or something like that. Whereas oncologists are sort of always exposed, always out there trying to provide care for their patients in a fairly, you know, uncontrolled, almost panicked pace. And I think that's what's leading to this increase in oncology burnout today.
Is there increasing awareness of the symptoms of burnout in oncology?
You know, it's not clear to me who is really sensing this burnout. As the head of a group, I run a fairly big hem-onc division, you get the feeling that this is bubbling up from a lot of different sources. But, you know, I'm not sure that everyone sees it as burnout, but I do actually hear more and more talk about how individuals are really just burning out. They're exhausted from the pace of their day and the demands on them. So it's not that it's a secret. I don't think people are ashamed or somehow feel weak because they are feeling this burnout, which is good. I think its first point is we have to recognize that this may be happening. And so I do think there's an awareness of this. But I do also think that there are people who are just nose down plowing forward, feeling like they have no choice. And I worry about those people the most in some ways.
Now, what are the long-term consequences or what could they be on burnout, both for the individual and when it comes to patient care?
Well, this is really on a personal level. because I feel like I have been experiencing burnout myself. And, you know, I don't really know, other than broad brushstrokes of what burnout does for anyone in their profession, but so I don't really have any great insights apart from my own personal experience about oncology and burnout. But for me, it, you know, it was a feeling like I could just never get things done. There was always something, whether I was going to bed worrying about something or waking up first thing in the morning worrying about something. When you balance the intensity of patient care against all of our other duties, you know, there's always something hanging. There is no escape from your day-to-day job. And so I began to resent patients on some level, that, you know, every request they had for me was somehow, you know, felt as a burden instead of sort of my obligation or my duty. Now, I will say that that patient interface has changed, and I think maybe has led to some of our burnout, is that in the old days, patients were somehow honored to get to see us, and I realize that's probably not good either, but it has really shifted the other way to where we are now sort of considered employees of the patient. We are supposed to be always available. We're supposed to give them unlimited access, whether it's our cell phones or our emails or whatnot. And that's kind of an expectation of the healthcare market today. Our bosses, our administrative leads, our hospital administrators want us to get good reviews on Yelp. You know, they want us to be, you know, good service providers. And without being able to partition off our day or our week, I think it really creates this resentment. So fatigue clearly is one of the downstream side effects. Anxiety about not performing your job well enough. Resentment of the patient. All of those lead to a less happy, less content person. And then it, of course, can trickle down to the other staff that you interface with day in and day out. And so this makes for an unhealthy set of circumstances. It's really back to an impaired work-life balance, that if you don't have that work-life balance, you can't do the kind of intense job that we have for long without it affecting performance.
So in your opinion, what can be done to kind of restore that work-life balance? Is it, you know, venting to other colleagues who are experiencing the same thing? Is it trying to discuss it with your family members who maybe aren't as familiar but can offer an alternate perspective?
Yeah, I think this is a good question. A lot of institutions have begun to recognize this problem and under the umbrella of wellness, right? And so I was talking to one of my colleagues, and he was saying that, well, their effort at wellness was to schedule additional wellness meetings, right? So it's like the last thing we need is another meeting to go and vent. It wasn't like they took away anything. They just added another hour that was now going to be focused on wellness. I do think recognition is important, that it is causing and having an impact on us. You also then want to look at the cause. So a lot of people, a lot of oncologists will immediately blame the electronic medical record. The typical day for a busy oncologist now is that they see patients all day long and do their best to try and keep up with documentation during the day, but no, they cannot. And so they then go home, maybe after rounding in the hospital, have dinner with their family, maybe read a book with their kids, and then when everybody's in bed, they go to their home office and do their notes for the day. And so then they're going to bed at midnight only to wake up at 6 the next morning and start it all over again. So it's just that the EMR, the out-of-clinic time required to update and you know, finalize the documentation is a true burden. And, you know, if you're not doing it at night, you're doing it on the weekends. And so the electronic medical record is clearly part of the problem. The second is the increasing demands, as I said, from patients and the like, and our healthcare systems are putting more demands on us to have us be as efficient as we can. Those of us who do clinical research, we feel like the added burdens, administrative burdens that have been imposed over the last 10 years in clinical research are crazy in some cases. And so they are adding to the time we spend just to have clinical trials available for our patients. And so when you put all these things together, they're just not enough hours in the day. So back to your question of how do you solve this? Well, you need to both optimize your time, right? Put things on the schedule or that are during the work day that basically say, okay, this is the time I'm going to be doing my notes. This is the time I'm going to be doing research. Sort of organize it so it's not always being put off for other things. I do think you're, you know, venting and talking with friends, colleagues is important. I mean, maybe even professional help at some level. But again, that's back to the time commitment. Do you have the time commitment to do that? But I also think on the other side, our employers and the systems that we work in need to look at how things are being done. And, you know, we have this RVU metric that we are all under. And we are thinking about how do we reprioritize the value of a patient visit. You know, right now we get so many credits, if you will, for every follow-up and every new patient, but we know that that actually means a lot of out-of-clinic time for each of us, and we don't ever get credit for that. So I actually think we need to reevaluate the rules, how RVUs are credited. I think we need to reevaluate how we handle the electronic medical record, who can enter in the data. So this is more of a systems and even national level. I think we need to develop some sort of system for reward that credits the activity and productivity in exchange for time off. And I don't mean just going to the beach. I mean, whether you know, some sort of professional development, sabbatical-like time off. And as you suggest, I really think we need to impose or create culture that values the work-life balance, that it's not a source of pride to have gotten 200 emails every day. We need to figure out how to reduce that burden so that people can be productive and be that person, be that physician for their patients.
Well said. I like that reward system that you suggested. Now, you mentioned wellness earlier. What kind of elements does that entail?
Well, I think it's a matter of having some part of your life or multiple parts of your life where you forget about work for a while. You know, that could be exercise. That could be a hobby. It could be, you know, dedicated family time that you've put on your calendar that nobody can schedule on top of. You know, it really depends on where you are and what is the best for you. I mean, I do think we need to worry about our health as regards to stress, as it can be eating problems or alcohol problems as ways of escaping. And so we need these escapes to be positive. I found personally that when I'm watching a Washington Nationals game at the ballpark, I'm escaping. I almost never look at my phone, even in between innings. I just sit and watch the game and spend time with my family. So I've made a conscious decision to get more baseball tickets and go and sit and watch a game. But that was for me. But I think things like that are very important for all of us.
Absolutely. Now, having experienced burnout yourself, do you have any advice for maybe younger generations who are, you know, just beginning their medical career?
Yeah, I do, actually. I am on the other end, as you're not implying, but everybody knows. So I'm playing the back nine, as they say, of my career. And, you know, the burnout didn't really happen to me until later. And that's, I think, in large part because I had an incredibly supportive family and wife who sort of understood why I was working so hard. And I was also personally very driven in my early years to achieve these things. So, you know, for me, I was lucky early in my career, but not everybody has that. Many are two-career families, and, you know, everybody's getting pulled in different directions, and it can create a lot of tension and therefore also burnout. So just be conscious of it through your early and mid-careers, and make sure you sort of have marathon mentality for your career, because while many of us, it feels like because medical training is so long that we don't even start our careers till we're quite old, relatively old, it's still a long run. It's still a long marathon, and you have plenty of time to contribute and care for your patients over you know, several decades. And so pace yourself is important. Make sure you take time for this even early on. And then as we go along, try and reshape your career. Now, those people who move from one institution to another or one city to another, I think have some advantage in that they get a reboot, right? You get a fresh start with new patients, or you get a fresh institution to learn. And so it sort of is a reboot for you. Those people who've stayed in the same place or the same office practice for many, many years, I worry about those people probably more, because they not only carry the institutional knowledge, they also carry the institutional burdens of being senior members. So I'm not encouraging people to move from one institution or another, but those people who do stay at institutions, those are the ones that need the longer break or the career development kinds of breaks, that like a sabbatical, that give them fresh perspective.
Now, do you find or have you found that larger medical meetings are incorporating lectures or sessions on burnout, like such as ASCO or even ESMO, for example?
Yeah, not so much. And I think the people who go to those meetings aren't the ones who are going to go to that kind of meeting. They're there to hear the science. So I actually think this needs to come, you know, more private, more one-on-one, you know, where it's web-based, this sort of thing, that people like this podcast, where people are just talking about it and thinking about it and, is, you know, reflecting, is this me or is this my partner, and how can we help each other? Because I don't think there's one single formula for fixing this. It's more of an awareness that, yeah, many of us are going through this, and we need to think together how best to help each other.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that you wanted to emphasize that I didn't ask you?
If we're going to reduce burnout, we have to actually work together. I could not have taken my sabbatical, for example, without really three different permissions, three different groups that said it was okay. One was my own institution that, you know, I'm lucky enough to be at one that still maintains sabbatical function for some of its faculty. So first I had to apply and they had to say yes. The second was my colleagues. So, you know, it's different if you work for a company, you can just take, you know, time off and other people can sort of pick up your projects, or maybe you can put them on hold. But my projects are patients. These are human beings. And so and I also have administrative duties. And so I had to find, and they were nice enough to say yes, colleagues who would cover me and cover my patients. And then the third group was the patients themselves. And I have to tell you, when I was saying to my patients that I was going to take this break, their initial reaction was one of kind of abandonment. How could I do this to them? And then, but almost in the same sentence, they were saying, but I think this is a good idea and I hope it goes well for you. They were wishing me well at the same time. And so I was lucky enough to be in a place and a situation where all three of my contingencies, if you will, were supportive of my taking some time off. But even on a much smaller scale, if we're going to have burnout reduced, we're going to have an impact, we need to help each other. In a time when there's a lot more individual requirements, individual expectations, and individual metrics, we need to actually shift away from that and have a more shared product mentality. I think of waiters in fancy restaurants. The best service at fancy restaurants is one where the restaurant, everybody's taking care of everybody, right? This sort of shared model. You have one primary waiter, but everybody who walks by your table helps take care of you, versus one where that waiter is your waiter and everybody else is somebody, you know, is working on somebody else. And when you tip at that restaurant, you get a pooled model, right? So at the shared model where whatever you're giving gets distributed evenly across the entire group. And I think we need to think about that kind of model for our teams, that we're all working together and that the revenue and the credit is a shared revenue, a shared credit, and not this individual productivity. And I think when we get to that sort of team concept, I actually think we will see a diminishment of burnout across the board.
That's a great point. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today, Dr. Marshall.
Thank you, too, and I hope it helps other people.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this special episode of Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for new interviews from our State of the Science summits and exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive's SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Onc Live On Air.